Blog Talk Radio.
Essie and Bomber have been litigating and trying these cases to verdict for over two decades. We started handling sex abuse cases in the school settings, and unfortunately we've gravitated to handling the adult sexual assault cases involving rideshare.
Good evening, all you fly turkeys, and welcome to the Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. Additionally, there will be a chance for listeners to inquire about intended meaning, inspiration, nuance, poetic device, and any other details that the author is willing to expand upon. My name is Jeremy F. I am your host, and as always, I am joined by my lovely and talented co-host, Pam Ray, who back in her nautical days was known to be proficient in at least 43 different styles of knot. Basically, if it was a rope, if it was wet, if it needed to be anchored to the dock, Pam was your gal, and probably still is. Pam, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing not so well.
Hey, check it out. Fun.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
Oh, my God. I am doing great. I apologize for the confusion, but to be honest, I saw that you had an intro for today's date. Then the original one started, so I stopped that. I started the one for the date, but then it was just talking, and I don't know if there was going to lead up to music, but it just kept talking about adult sexual abuse cases, and I'm just like,
that must have been the wrong link. No.
Yeah.
That would have been a mistake. So I'm glad you got us covered.
Jesus, he's making a political statement. He needs to warn me ahead of time.
Hell no. No, I'm glad you chose the way you did because, no, that was not the intent. So good job. Good job.
Right.
Do we have a couple headliners on the phone with us tonight?
So far we have one. I would like to welcome S.V. Masterson. Welcome. Glad you could join us.
Heck, glad to be here, guys. It's kind of late for us here, but I enjoy being selected to be on your program.
Well, we're excited to have a conversation with you. We had another headliner. Casey Day was supposed to join us as well, so hopefully she'll show up here in a bit. Do we have anyone else on the line, Pam, besides SE?
Nope, just us three turkeys.
All righty then, brother. You are going to get to kick us off tonight. I'm going to grab your first poem on your set list, put it on the board, and when you're ready to recite it for us, we'll dive right in.
Okay, this one is called Stand Beside Me. Stand beside me now in the fading light as the fires of dissension fill the night. Be the voice of reason that calms the storm. Be that single light that will last until dawn. With each act of kindness, the tide will turn. People will finally understand the lesson to be learned. Knowledge is the doorway. Wisdom is the key. Raise your banner high, then follow me. By grace we live within this realm. By grace we rise above. Hope is never lost. It just sometimes goes astray. Faith will lead us home, for grace knows the way. And that's it. It's an inspirational poem that has been out there for a little while.
It's a very inspirational poem. Pam, you want to start us with the comments?
Oh, absolutely. This is beautiful. It has wonderful imagery, a wonderful rhyme and flow. I like the title. It makes me think of the song Stand By Me, which is one of my absolute favorites. There's a spirituality to this that is very deep. I like how it can be about a romantic relationship, but it can also be about your relationship with a higher power. I really like with each act of kindness, the tide will turn. People will finally understand the lesson to be learned. Knowledge is the doorway. Wisdom is the key. Raise your banner high, then follow me. I like how we learn those life lessons by searching for knowledge, by searching for wisdom, and then along the way providing those acts of kindness. I did read through your poetry earlier, which I found absolutely wonderful with its storytelling abilities and also as the depth of spirituality in it. And so obviously, your spiritual life is very important to you. What else inspires your poetry? I shouldn't say obviously, but that's what I see in it. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd like to know what inspires you to write.
Okay, I've had it's pretty varied. I live here in Pensacola, so I'm close to I'm about 20 minutes away from the ocean, or from the Gulf, and I just love going down there and just sitting there with the waves and nature. And I've also have a 3.5-acre place here in Pensacola, and I have a forest behind part of the property that I call the Enchanted Forest. So I get a lot of inspiration from those two. I was a ghost I've done some ghost hunting, and some of the stuff kind of more macabre, but it gets into the ghost hunting atmosphere, our ghost hunter theme. And I'm a retired meteorologist, so I think weather is an arcane field too. So all those kind of like pick one and we'll go from there. You know, I like a variety.
Oh, very cool.
See, now, with just a little bit of prompting, Stephen, you could have gotten Pam to sing a couple bars from Stand By Me. If you would have just said, I'm not familiar with the song, can you clue me a little bit more? We could have had her singing.
I can still wait. I'm here for it, okay?
And to be a meteorologist, a retired meteorologist, you know that there is some severe weather down there in Florida, right? I mean, you know
I've done tropical weather, so I try to keep my hands out of it now, but I still get a lot of calls.
So I'm going to go into the danger zone a little bit because we don't want to be off-putting to anybody, and we don't want to get into any super debates about religion. But, yeah, I picked up on what Pam said too, and I kind of want to open the door for you a little bit more. I like how you did this because and Pam and I have talked about it 100 times about faith, what's appropriate, what's not, how you keep an audience engaged if that is not their leaning or their proclivity to be super faithful or have faith in their life. But what I liked about this is the fact that you touch on it, and you touch on it in an endearing way. You touch on it in a light manner in which I don't feel like I'm kept out of the club, regardless of my religious beliefs. You know, I think it's okay.
I don't want to block anybody out. I just want them to have the same when they close their eyes. I want my imagery to bring them in with me in the poem, and then they can get whatever meaning they want. Everybody takes their own meaning or take from the poem. I don't write. I just write a poem and let you decide what gives it meaning. It's up to you.
And that's very gracious, and that's what I'm commending you on. I mean, I think you instill that feeling of greater love or greater power or however you want to put it. I think you do that with a lot of grace in this one, and it's endearing, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So I'll open the door a little bit. Do you want to talk a little bit more about how faith or any of that plays into poetry for you or what your upbringing has been or any of that on a lighter level?
The next poem that we talk about, is everybody has muses that they use. A lot of my poems had to do with angels. Angels are just it's easy to identify with and easy to bring them into a poem. So the next one is what I use as my muses is the angels. But as far as inspiration, I try to weave that through a lot of poems. Not necessarily, they don't have to, they can be spiritual and not, because it's spiritual to you, how you hold the poem, okay? I have a lot of poems about the deep space and space exploration and stuff. And that's, even though it doesn't say spirituality, it means the same thing when you start reading the poem. So it's however anybody takes the poem, but I try to instill that in the poem and then let the reader decide.
I like how you put that. All right, well, you've set it up nicely. So the next poem, Inspiration of Angels, by the Inspiration of Angels, is ready when you are.
Okay. By the inspiration of angels, when the world is asleep in the darkness of the night, I sit silently under the light of one flickering candle, alone with my thoughts, alone with my dreams. My shadow stands behind me. My shadow dances behind me, creating illusions in my mind, searching for a word or image to start my first line. I know when my muses arrive, with inspiration they come to call. Destiny takes my right hand, fortune takes my left. Grace stands behind me, the place she loves the best. Anne floats in from heaven with the light that she brings. Together they open my eyes to a universe of things. I am just a blank canvas, painting images that they show. Together we walk, then fly to all the places angels know. Floating to the stars or on the ocean's floor, nothing is beyond us now. The universe is an open door.
It's really a love poem, and I feel that. I mean, I felt, and what really is the cool move is that you put a name to it. You put Anne in there because obviously that's personal to you, but all of us have our Anne, right? All of us have that one that inspires us. And I like that you're using this as a greater metaphor for your process of being creative, for your process of writing. You're looking for that muse. You're looking for something inside, that inner id that puts ink to paper, which we can relate to, too, as being on the site. So in a lot of ways, you bring, especially the all poetry, you bring that audience in this one. But it's a personal poem as well. I think it's really sweet. Very well done.
When you add a name to the poem, whether it's the theme of the poem, you put her name or the name at the beginning of the poem, or you address the poem with the name, that personalizes the poem, and it makes people identify more with the poem than just having an abstract word.
No, I think that's a really cool poetic device. I've never thought of it that way. Because, yeah, I've always been scared to tell too much about myself by putting some personal name in a poem because I feel like it excludes. But I mean, this is the first time that I've seen it, and I feel like I was included more. I felt closer to you because you're telling more of your personal story. So that's a really cool move. I really like that. excuse me. You talked about your surroundings a little bit. You talked about being down in Florida, the forest behind your house. So when you sit down and you write a poem, can you tell us what the setting is like, what the process is like for you?
Setting in my house is kind of chaotic. We live on a large acreage here, but we do a lot of fostering for animals. So I have to find the time whenever I can find the time between all the dogs and the cats barking. And it's usually a few hours in the morning when everybody's still asleep. I can get out, have a cup of coffee, and write something. As the day wears on, chances of having a quiet moment decrease a lot. So I most of my stuff is most of my writing is in the morning. I can sneak off to the beach in the morning, or walk off into the forest behind us. I try to get as much done in the morning as possible. So so you guys know where I'm coming from. We've got a if a dog came to the door, we haven't turned it away, so they're all here.
No, it's a cool take because, I mean, we've talked through previous headliners about how many people do exactly what you just described, obviously in different settings. They're not all in your backyard. But, no, it's cool to think about other poets out there in the world. And I like the way you described it, too, because I want to think when I'm going on a hike or when I'm out in the world and I see someone in contemplative hike mode, that maybe they're composing a poem, too. So that's very cool. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like how that you and I apologize. Do you prefer to be called SV or Mr. Masterson, or can we call you by your first name?
Yeah, you can call me Stephen. I use SV because it kind of maybe a little air of distinction when you look at the poem. I've had like four books, and SV. To me it kind of works a little bit with initials. When you get to know me, a lot of people on the site say have it by first name.
Yes, as a name on a book or all poetry, it definitely works really well. I just kept finding myself stumbling because I would have that mid-sentence thought of, you know, should I be calling him this or this? So, but anyways, I really do like, Stephen, that you brought up how you make time to write, you know, and it's so relatable and it's so true. And it is, as Jeremy says, something we've discussed before, because if something's important to you, you'll make time for it. I really like the imagery in this. I really like how it's about, you know, the searching for that muse and the different places you can find it in. You know, when you had the point where you had the two names, Grace and Anne, and Jeremy had brought up, you know, that that was a nice personal touch. I thought, you know what, that really is a wonderful personal touch to have a name. It made me think of, if I remember this right, Anne is supposed to be the name of the mother of Mary in the Bible, though it never specifically says, but that's what I had read before. And so instantly I'm thinking, oh, okay, so, you know, this kind of has a whole, like, Catholic-type vibe to it. And, but you know, one of the things I like about poetry is how it brings out, and I really like alone with my thoughts, alone with my dreams, my shadow dances behind me, creating illusions in my mind. And all of those things, even our own thoughts within ourselves, something we can just kind of grab a hold of to be amused. And now, when it comes to your poetry and your writing, and you're writing in the moment, are you simply just focused on what is right for you, or do you have an awareness with each line, with each image you choose, how potential audience is going to react to the poem?
I just get into the. I put headsets on. I find I've got a lot of music that I have for different themes that I've got on Spotify or on YouTube. I'll put those on. I'll go through the NASA pictures. I'll go through other pictures and or stuff that I've made, and I'll come up with one that I start the first line, and after I get the first line, I look at the picture, and then I'm going from there. And I can if I can get the first line or two going. And then I usually can continue on with the thought process. I don't. I'm not writing it for anybody more than just expressing the image and the feeling and emotion I have at the time, whatever meaning that it has to someone. I'm not writing for. I'm just putting the poem out there and letting the audience decide if it's a good poem or not.
Oh, absolutely. And I would like the opportunity to ask a bonus question, Jeremy.
Of course.
Well, I'm just noticing that, Stephen, you have a lot of photography attached to your poems. The ones that are actual photography and not artwork, do you take those pictures?
I've taken a lot of pictures. I take the pictures either across from me from the property I have here. A friend of ours and his family have a huge lake over there. I took some pictures over there, and I've got some great pictures from there. I take it and I use the Corel software and I can make it into a fantasy picture. I take the beach and I can take a still shot and dump it into a fantasy type theme, or change the outlook into a watercolor impression. I do that.
Ooh,
to match what I'm trying to portray in the poem. So if I want a impression to make a little more make the poem stand out more, then I'll do that.
And keep going along that. No, I like that too, Pam. And I'm glad you asked that question, because I didn't pick up on that. And that's something I've thought about too, because I have photographer family members, and I've thought about marrying the two together. So what drives what for you, Stephen? Is it the poem and then you're looking for an accompanying picture, or is it vice versa? When you're out walking, you see something that inspires you, you take a picture and then write the poem. What exactly – how does that marriage work?
I think the picture is normally the first I normally look at the image. I'll go through the image and I'll have a bunch of images, and I'll finally decide on one image, and then I'll look at that and say this picture really has something to say, and then I'll start working with the picture, and then I may modify the picture a little bit to push whatever the theme is, but I suppose the image does it first, if I enter into a contest or something, and then I use the image or the whatever the person has the contest, but normally it's the image first, and then I write the poem to match the image and the feeling I have.
No, I think that's cool, and it's something we talked about. Remember, Pam, we talked about that recently, about capturing moments or capturing energies or capturing emotions at a specific moment. I think we talked about it about a poet the other week that walks away from poems and then comes back later. So I think capturing an image and then being able to hold that and then use that as a muse is a really cool device. I really like that. Cool conversation. Your next poem, my friend, Mansion on the Hill, is ready when you are.
Okay, this is – I wanted to show that I have a variety of themes. This goes more into a gothic Halloween theme or a mystery theme. I've done some mystery stuff too. So I'll go ahead and start now. Mansion on the Hill. Dark clouds cling like a shroud. They hover over the mansion on the hill. Like a ghost obscures the daylight still. 13 steps rise from the walk before you reach the door. A sinister black cat sits in the window on the ground floor. Organ music can be heard, soft and low. It seems to come from every place I go. A funeral march with no end, a fitting sound for this house of ill wind. Gargoyles stare at me from their lofty throne, daring me to invade their home. The door is solid, centuries old. It protects me from the dark secrets never meant to be told. A laughing skull holds a giant iron ring in its mouth. I raise the ring and release it. It echoes through the house. The door opens wide. I step inside. Alone in the dark, will I survive? Will I pass through this night alive?
You get to go first on this one, Pam.
Oh, I really do enjoy a good dark story, you know, and especially when it has a whole gothic feel to it. You know, Stephen, I'm going to have to, if you don't mind, send you the link to all the different Halloween week shows that Late Night Poets does, because we've got some contests and topic boards that I think you would just do, like, you know, absolutely have fun with. You know, so
I'd like to see those.
All right, very cool. Yeah, but I'll make sure to get that link to you. But I like that you bring in the number 13 and the idea of the suspicion. You know, 13 steps rise from the walk before you reach the door. A sinister black cat in the window on the ground floor. It makes me think of the 13 Club, and I think it's been around since like the 1800s or something like that, but there's these group of people that get, and they were famous people like authors and stuff, who would get together and purposely have 13 guests just to defy that suspicion. I also like that you bring in the gargoyles. Gargoyles stare at me from their lofty throne, daring me to invade their home. And to me, that part was particularly, important, because it reminds us that gargoyles, well, first of all, two things. Gargoyles were meant to be guardians, but at the same time, they were actually water systems. They actually were originally created to help drain water away. So they had a practical use. Not that you mentioned that, but I'm just throwing in that little tidbit. But I really enjoy this dark, right, strong imagery. You know, of course, immediately I'm thinking, you know, of Edgar Allan Poe, Mary Shelley. And so with thoughts of famous authors, I'd like to know what classic poets or authors are an inspiration to you. Like, which ones do you read? Meyer.
Of course, I read Poe growing up, and I like some of his stuff. I haven't really, very few, I've read very few besides the poems that we had in high school and college. I haven't really read a lot outside of like pull. I have a good friend, R.A. Salvatore, which he's a sci-fi writer. I talked with him and done some.
Very cool.
But we're I just kind of find my own little niche, and I haven't really Poe, but I like the dark theme that Poe had, but I haven't really tried to mirror my poetry after somebody.
Well, I think it's important to be uniquely yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I always love when Pam asks that question, because I love hearing the influences of everyone else. Because I don't think people realize how much it plays a part, because I feel a lot of those veins in what you're writing. I mean, how can one not have appreciation for a great poet and write poetry and not have that influence? So yeah, I don't feel like you're trying to emulate that at all. I think that being influenced by someone still, it can shine through a number of levels. And kind of following along with that, I've noticed that in terms of poetic device and what's important to you, I see that you bring a lot of rhyme in there and also rhetorical question. How important is that in your poetry? How much does that craft the individual piece of art that you're creating each time when you're infusing those devices?
I started out doing free verse, and then I switch over to rhyme. Rhyme seems to people identify more with the poem. They can remember parts of the poem better with the rhyme than with a free verse. So when somebody makes a comment, it's usually done with some sort of talking about the rhymes, whether it's a couplet or whether the rhymes seem to draw out the best comments. So I like rhymes. It's more of a challenge to write rhymes than free verse. Free verse, you just have a flow, whereas the rhymes, you've got actually a little more of a wordsmith to put them into the poem.
Absolutely. It's definitely a talent. I shy away from it because it's hard as hell. It's hard as hell to make rhyme work and feel natural. But I really like what you just said about it makes it more memorable, because you're right. I never thought of it that way, that the reason that you like song lyrics, the reason that you like, I mean, any kind of memorable poet lines that I can still put together in my head from any classic poet is because it. Can you hear
me? Are you there?
Oh,
now we can.
Did any of that come through?
You cut off, but most of it. Okay, I'm trying to remember.
You probably got the gist of what.
Because I can't remember the point you cut off.
You probably got the gist of my rambling. The point is that I like the fact that it's memorable when it rhymes. I like that. And so my follow-up to that would be, do you ever find yourself, when I try too much to infuse a poetic device, I'm a huge fan of assonance. I'm a huge fan of alliteration. But sometimes I've become a slave to it, and it takes over the poem. I'm not criticizing anything you're creating, because I love how you use rhyme. I think you do a great job at it. But does it ever hinder your message at any point? Do you find that it ever is dragging you? Go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm trying to I think a poem should create an image. And if I can't create an image with the rhyme, then I'll go free verse just to create the image. And then you may have some rhyme in it, but it mainly be free verse, because I think the image is a lot more important than the rhyme scheme. So if I'm trying to especially open up a poem, I want the image to draw you in and be kind of a hook that draws you in. It may not be rhyme, and then you may progress to rhyme later on in the poem. But the image may, again, the hook might have to be something, that imagery that just jumps out at you and you go from there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you're not afraid to deviate from your format, because, yeah, it can handcuff you. And so, cool. Very great response. All right, brother man, this is your time to shine. This is the point in the interview in which you get to unabashedly self-promote. So tell us about, you're obviously here on All Poetry. Tell us about any publications, any other places we could find your work.
Okay, I've got three books out there. The last one was done by with Kevin through allpoetry.com. It's called A Refuge, A Sacred Place. And it's again, it was the last one. It has about 200 of my poems in there. And I think it's a pretty good representation of different types and different poems. The earlier poems that I wrote from the first two books were, I believe I was still trying to find my place and find the style I wanted. And by the time I got to the one that I put through All Poetry, it was a lot more refined. So that seems to be the one to go with is the one that Kevin pushed on his through All Poetry. It's A Refuge, A Sacred Place.
And so to find your publications, are they all available under the pen name F.V. Masterson?
Yes, they are.
And are they available on, like, Amazon?
Yeah, they're available
or
on Amazon, Books A Million. I think that's probably about it, Amazon, Books A Million. It was published, the other books I published through Amazon Press.
Oh,
so
cool.
This was done through Kevin and All Poetry.
Right on, right on. Well,
I'll be working on the next
one.
I'm just trying to, I got enough material for the next one. I'm just waiting to slow down and start compiling everything.
Life always gets in the way. So I hope the links are available to your books on your profile. Is that true?
Yeah, they are.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, I encourage everyone to check him out. And your next poem, my friend, Shared Destiny, is available and ready when you are.
Okay. Shared Destiny, my wife and I have went through a course as paranormal investigators, and we've gone through a lot of places that you can definitely tell that they were haunted. This one gives a feel of the same type, like a ghost hunting adventure. It just takes it and kind of adds a little emotional, kind of a love poem to it. Okay, Shared Destiny. I awake in the night, the room is bathed in moonlight. A familiar vision sits at the foot of the bed. She gazes at the stars and whispers words unsaid. The starlight shines through her ghostly form, no threat of anger or threat of harm. We have found a friendship those centuries apart. She has captured my interest and captured my heart. Married to a specter that dwells within me during the day, I carry her to my work on long walks by the sea where we play. It is in the nighttime when she thrives. It is the nighttime that keeps our love alive. We talk and share two different worlds, two different points of view. A life left unfulfilled, life searching for answers shared by two. Share lives now within one beating heart, two lives sharing a destiny no longer apart.
Great poem, and it really hits home because I have proposed marriage to Pam Ray at least a dozen times. She says since we live apart, it would be like being married to a ghost. So this very much hits home for me.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm holding out for that herd of caribou.
So, buddy, you got to fill us in. I mean, what's the muse? You've mentioned it twice, and I'm super intrigued by this fascination you have with the paranormal. You got to fill us in on what inspires this poem.
Well, we've gone through a lot of investigations where we'll sit there and something will move and there's nobody there. Something has come on when there's nothing. We had one an old church in Alton, Illinois, where somebody started the coffee pot, And everybody's sitting around the room staring at each other, and all of a sudden the coffee pot starts on its own. We've been in places, we just have that feeling that you know something's going on. And we've been through a lot of places that have been haunted and still haunted. And this is just a feeling that I wanted to kind of weave a love story in with the ghost story. So you see the figure sitting on the end of the bed and gazing out the window and being able to see through her. Okay, so I thought that was kind of a stark realization there for the ghost.
No, it's a cool experience to share with people, and it always spurs the imagination. So I like this poem in most regards. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. First of all, I like how you spoke a bit about the poem in the beginning before reading it, and I like that this is a story right, but it's also a personal right, because as you were mentioning in response to Jeremy's question, is, you know, you and your wife have these shared experiences. And so it's something between the two of you, something that connects the two of you. And I think that is just so cool. Not only the sense of connection that here in the poem and also in your talking about it, but I think it's so cool to be one of those people, because there always seems to be certain people that they attract that kind of energy more. Like I believe there are ghosts and poltergeists and things out there that we can't completely understand necessarily, but I don't have a lot of experience with it, because there just seems to be certain people that energy from another dimension or world or whatever you call it seems to be attracted to them. I will say, though, that I have seen videos, because I'm from up north in Wisconsin, and I've seen videos and read stories about haunted Wisconsin tours, and I'm like, that is my dream trip someday, to go on a haunted Wisconsin tour. And I really like that you made this into a love story. It is a very classical feel love story, and of connection that happens across, you know, time and space. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
If you get a chance to go to a haunted house or something, and if you buy some period coins, if you find coins from the period where they said the people that lived in the house, and you put those coins on a desk or on a chair, and you put them out of sequence, meaning that you have, instead of having from low to high, you have them all mixed up. Then you wait, and you see if somebody puts them back in the right order.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be cool.
Thanks, buddy. Now I'm not going to sleep tonight. Thanks a lot.
Now you're thinking.
All the change out of my pocket, and I'm not going to sleep tonight. Thank you for that. But you know what? I really like what you just said about a lot of that, Pam, because cool stories to me, and I like that you identified this as a story poem, and especially with poetry, because I will argue till the cows come home that love is the underlying message in 99% of poems out there. But I like that you picked up that this was a love poem, because you always find that vein, and again, when a writer does something really well, they're drawing people into something that they have an affinity for, they want to be part of. And the fact that this is a love poem wrapped into a paranormal poem is a really astute observation. I like that conversation. Great thought. Your next poem, my friend, Adam Leah, is available and ready when you are.
Okay. Next poem is Avon Lee. It was a friend of mine. She's writing a lot of kids' books. She uses Mermaid. She publishes a lot. This was published with one of her children's books, and it's more of a fairy tale. I just wanted to show that I have a variety instead of doing the same. A lot of times people get stuck in the same same themes. I try to, even though most of mine may follow the same theme, I do every now and then get out of the theme. So this is more or less of a fairy tale. Avon Lee, an angel in waiting with the promise of enchantment and magic. Silently she whispers to the birds of the night, they trail behind as she walks. She walks down the cobblestone path through the town, then down to the sea. She brings with her the moonbeams and stardust, the properties from which dreams are made. Traveling slowly past the houses, first she bows, then she waves. With each visit, a gift is left to open as your dreams take flight on this starlit night. Past the shops, down the harbor, then to the sea. She spreads her wings at the ocean's door and rides to become a star in a nighttime sky.
Great presentation. Pam, start us off, please.
Yeah, I really like that you're offering up a variety to show that you are a versatile poet. And I think writing for children poetry is so very important. And I like that you mentioned that your poem is in this book. You know, I feel like the way we can get the next generation interested in poetry is to be able to expose them to it. And you know, obviously you can lead a horse to water. Like, you know, I read poetry to all four of my kids, and all they do is roll their eyes when I read it. So, you know, but I really like this. This one is a fine example of some, I would say, like, delicate alliteration, a beautiful use of imagery. The properties from which dreams are made, traveling slowly past the houses. First she bows and then she waves. Each visit a gift is left to open as your dreams take flight. I like that this reminds children that they have the possibility to follow their dreams. And I would like to know, what was it that got you started in writing poetry?
We had done a lot of, again, we were doing ghost poems, and the first poem that I ever wrote was Ghost Whispers, and it was, it's still out there, but it was taken from the experience that we had when we went out on a house visitation, that you got the feeling that something was going on. So that's the first one I wrote, and I kind of incorporated that into the poem, and it didn't go anyplace. But it's the very first poem I did. It's on the website there, and then it's had people look at it. But it's my first attempt at writing.
Good, cool.
And I like that, Stephen. And what I liked about this one is, even though, and what Pam has already stated, branching out is the spice of life, right? If I wrote 1,000 poems about horses, this would be a really short conversation about me and my horses. And you're not. You're branching out, and I appreciate that, because I think it stretches your pen, it stretches your talent, and it makes us as the reader that much more enthralled in talking more about and reading more of your work. What I really liked is I still felt like this was one of your poems, because you didn't totally abandon a lot of those devices. Dreams take flight on the starlit night. You still have that affinity for that rhyme. And there's a march to this too, in the third, down to the sea. And then you come in later in the third to last, down to the harbor and then to the sea. I mean, I felt a lot of what you like to do in your poetry in terms of your stylistic way of putting things together was you deviated from what we've talked about earlier tonight, but it still has your little flavor to it, and I like that. I like that I can identify it as yours,
but you're branching, you're spreading your wings. So that's very cool, and I like Pam's comment on that. So tell me, this is my favorite question to ask because I always need advice on it. When you can't, when it's not happening for you, when the words just are not flowing, what do you do to keep the juice alive? How do you break through that writer's block?
I go back and look through all the we've got tons of pictures that we've taken or I've taken. I go back through the every morning I look at the you've got right now you've got the Webb satellite that just came, the Webb, you got Hubble satellite, you got NASA pictures. Again, I like the space out atmosphere first, or if that doesn't work, then I'll grab the car and go down to the beach or go out to someplace. I just sit there until I get a feel. Normally, I can come up with something in a few hours. Sometimes I start a poem and it sits there for a day or a day and a half until I can. I'll put four lines together and then I'll start writing the next paragraph, next few lines, and it doesn't look good, so I'll erase it and start all over again. So sometimes a poem can take a while until I get the feel that that's what I was trying to express.
And I forgot. I already forgot, but I like that. I like that you always have that muse in your quiver. The fact that you're using the imagery to kind of guide, kind of capture the feeling that you're trying to convey, and then you can lean back on that. So I like that because it extends beyond the mind's eye. So I like that you're able to combat writer's block because I hate when I have it. So that's great advice for everyone. And then the other follow-up is, with all of the device that you're using, all of the intention, the rhyme, again, is what I want to focus on. So when you come up, when you're composing your poetry, there has to be an extensive editing process. Can you talk to me that a little bit?
I'll write a poem and I'll finish the poem and then I'll rewrite it four or five times. I'll go back and I'll change words. I'll go back. My wife of We'll look at the poem and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And I'll make changes. I've got other poets, close friends and on the site, in the All Poetry, that will say, hey, look, Stephen, you made a mistake on line three. Maybe we need to change that. And I'll look at it and say, yeah, you got me on that one. And I'll edit it. So I have a, when I put a poem out there and I don't have anybody else edit it, you've got about a 30 or 40% chance I'll be doing it again. After it goes on there, I'll have to make some sort of a change to it. If I have somebody look at it first, it may go just one time and go out. So I'm lucky to have people that review the poems before they get too far out.
No, hell yeah, having a support group to help you through the editing process has got to be nice. No, I like that because, yeah, no, I can't leave my poems alone. I look at them and I'm always touching them up and I'm always switching things around. So I think it's smart to have a committee that's keeping you sane throughout the entire process. And it shows. I think you have a high-quality product that you're putting out there. It's a refined piece of art. So I like that a lot. Your next poem, The Fragrance of Roses, is available and ready when you are.
Okay, this is another love poem that kind of incorporates both the ocean and a kind of spectral theme. The Fragrance of Roses, at the edge of the ocean, at the entrance of the sea, a maiden fair waits for me. In the cold mist of a frosty morn, she rises from the waves and takes form. She drifts on shore with the tide to take her place by my side. The fragrance of roses fills me as we embrace. Lovers from a different time and a different place. Love has found me those centuries apart. She captures my spirit and my heart. It's the same theme. It moves us towards the ocean and kind of the alluring theme of the ocean and theme of love lost and love regained.
But it's not the same. I mean, there's a directness to this. There is an honesty to this. It's a very clean, concise write compared to some of the longer pieces. It's only 10 lines. So it's different. And there's an intensity to that difference. So even though you might have some of the same themes, I think you took intensity to a different level, a love intensity to a different level, or at least a different take on this one. So I appreciate you including this one tonight. It's a very cool poem. All right, I haven't done this before. So Stephen, you're going to be my guinea pig on this. We're going to put you on the spot. We're going to put your poetic talent on the spot right now. You ready? So I got a casserole dish, 14-inch square casserole dish that explains your poetry. What kind of ingredients are you throwing in that casserole dish?
You stumped him with that one.
The silence is not encouraging. What do you got, Stephen?
Well, if it's a casserole dish, for me, it's going to have – it's probably going to be pretty colorful. I tried to have a imagery, so we're going to make it as imageful as possible. So you're going to have a lot of greens and reds and blues. So let's do strawberries and
You don't have to eat it, buddy. You don't have to eat it. You just have to make it poetic.
Let's put old leaves in there, and let's put old leaves in the casserole. Put old leaves in there, and then sand, and a little bit of stardust fairy dust, and just mix well, and then sort of see what you got.
You don't have to eat this dish, buddy. You just have to make it poetic. Great answer. Sorry to put you on the spot. Pam, what are your thoughts?
That's okay.
Well, my casserole dish would have Tony Cacciatore's Creole seasoning to make it hot and spicy. You wanted to know that.
it probably matches the personality, okay? You probably have a spicy and tantalizing personality.
Exactly. But I really like this one. And at first, because of the rhyme scheme and the fact that it ended with a couplet, I thought it was a sonnet. But if I'm reading it right, the syllable count per line is slightly off. But I like that you did the rhyme scheme and the ending couplet of a sonnet. I thought it gave it a very classical type feel that fit well with the topic of the story. You know, this just had really stunning imagery, especially in that second stanza. And what I really like about this is where you bring in the fragrance of roses fills me as we embrace. And I like that because imagery, as we all know, to poetics, it's so important, but there's more than just imagery. Like if you're going to bring a scene alive, if you're going to bring a story alive, you can't just have the things you look at. You have to have the things you taste, things you smell, you know, the sounds that you hear, you know, and you have that in this poem. So I thought this was just really beautifully written. I feel like I'm running out of questions. Plus, it's really difficult to top, you know, if your poem was a casserole dish. I'm sorry. It's been wonderful tonight.
No, Stephen, you've been a great interviewee. And I think Casey is not joined us yet, so you definitely have time for at least another one. So, your next poem, But I Miss the Rain, is available and ready when you are.
but I missed the rain from the sanctity of my room. A window opens up on the world in full bloom. Seasons like an hourglass moving in time. Sands drift down through the hourglass until the last in line. When one season leaves, the doors close, and next one enters. The birth of spring followed by the death of winter. I am protected from the storm, but I miss the rain. Through my window comes the fragrance of flowers and the promise of spring. In time, with the window open wide, I will step outside. In time, my life will change when I no longer need to hide.
Great read. Pam, you get to go first.
There were the people that had all the restrictions with COVID. They were stuck in the house. People were afraid to go out. Now there seem to be making a move where people are actually getting back into their lives. But for a long time, it was a sanctuary and a fort, and they just looked outside. They didn't have a chance to go outside.
Absolutely, yeah. And no, you're right about that, and I'm glad you brought that up. I actually know quite a few poets on All Poetry who started writing, who got into poetry because they were, you know, in lockdown during, you know, COVID. And so, yeah, I really like how this one hails back to, you know, your history of being a retired weatherman, and you can really see the love for the rain and the storm, but it's one of those poems that to me works well on a dual level. Like it can be literal, but it's also very metaphorical. You know, because before you even mentioned COVID, I hadn't even thought of that, I should have, but I thought of the idea of, you know, I think people who relate to this are perhaps people that are suffering from depression or what's that when you're afraid to go outside, agoraphobia, if I remember right.
Agoraphobia, yeah.
Yes, yes. You know, I think there's many different ways that people have their own sanctity and their own prison and their own longing for life to go back as before what it was like before the struggles came along. And so my question for you is, when you write a poem like this, are you a more like a literal person, a metaphorical poet, or do you try to make sure that there is the idea that people can get both from a poem?
With this one, I just wanted to relate to what everybody was going through. It wasn't feeling that I was going through alone. A lot of people were going through it. So I wondered something this came out during the height of, I believe, when you have all the lockdowns and stuff. I wanted to just to show that the feelings of being basically locked up for a while. So I just want to be to identify, maybe just this poem just to identify with life as it is that people are going through.
I like that. I like that. And before you go on, Jeremy, I want to say that to me, I think that's one of the most important things about poetry is that we give other people, other poets, the opportunity to say that you're not going through this situation alone. So I think that's wonderful.
No, and I think it's beautiful because I took this as a totally different, I mean, especially what we've all just been going through, right, Pam? I know you're probably aware, Stephen, we all lost a really good friend here at All Poetry recently, and I thought that's what this poem was about loss. And the way you read it, the way you presented the poem, this seemed to have a lot more of a personal twinge. You've had some incredible love poems tonight, some incredible environmental poems, but this one had a different, in your voice to me, there's a different twinge to it. Is there a deeper personal connection with what you're trying to convey on this poem?
The one line, but I missed the rain. There's so much that was going on outside. It is personal. There's so much that was going on outside that people were just depriving themselves of. The world was going, was still moving outside, but a lot of people were locking themselves in. And then we had so much that happened during that time. It was a feeling that just a kind of overwhelming emotion that kind of drew this poem of maybe a little bit of helplessness, maybe something will change, but maybe looking for a light at the end to come out. But right now you're basically have yourself secluded, and the world will change. Then you'll go outside and you'll experience the rain and the changes again.
Well, Stephen, I'm not going to disrespect you. We did not have our other headliner show up tonight. So we are going to give you the luxury of keep rolling through at least your entire set list, because you're here with us. You're doing a great job. You're a wonderful poet. And I want to continue to celebrate your poetry. So I am bringing up your next poem, Anticipation, if I can copy it right. So please don't fault Pam and I if we run short on questions, because we kind of ran through the gamut of of interview questions. We still want to celebrate your work. So go ahead and read your next poem, please. Anticipation.
Okay, this is a short one, but I think it has a strong meaning. Anticipation, standing in the tide, waiting for the next wave to arrive. Sweet anticipation held within the emotions and motions of the tides. Within the shadows of the waves, nature's moods are on display. Crossing an endless sea, I wait to be washed away.
So as Pam knows, Brevities and I have a fickle relationship. So you've got to tell me, of your entire body of work, why was it important to you to include? It's a beautiful. Let me start off by saying I don't want to belittle what you put together here. It's a beautiful poem, but why was it important for you to include brevity in this discussion tonight?
Okay, to be able to create an image in one word or five words or 15 words or four lines and still have that image, the same image I have, you have in your mind. Then what I did was worthwhile. If it takes me three pages to put an image in your mind, I should be able to do it in two lines or four lines. Can you identify with the poem? Can you stand in the waves and waiting for the next wave to come? Are you there when you close your eyes? Can you see the waves coming at you?
No, hell yeah. Great answer. I mean, if it takes me three words and I can take you there, then shouldn't that be enough? I love that answer. That's very cool, because, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but if you want to connect, if you want to tap that vein, if you want to get an audience to appreciate an emotion that you're trying to convey, it doesn't matter how long it takes. So, yeah, checkmate to you. I really enjoy that answer because, yeah, you did it. You did it in this one. You were able to get my mind's eye where I wanted it to be. And if it takes a mile, if it takes a minute, that's kind of semantics, right?
To get the job done, if you can do it in one word, then it's success. If it takes you a book and a half to do it, then success too.
I really like that. I think it's a great answer, Stephen. Pam has stepped away from the microphone, so I'm going to give her a reprieve and put your next poem up on the boards whenever you're ready. Fireside Murder Mystery.
I love doing mysteries. I love leaving an open-end mystery where you have to fill in the answer. Somebody, after I put this one out, a friend of mine, one of the fellow poets, said, "You didn't finish it." I said, "Well, it's up to you to finish it, so you'll have to finish it." Okay. Fireside Murder Mystery. By a roaring campfire, a body lay. A bloody knife lies buried in the sand by his left hand. A smoking pistol glows in the firelight by his right hand. Only one wound can be seen. Two people stand beside him at the mischief they had planned with gloved hands. They both confess the crime at hand, but only one will pay the price the law demands. The other walks away. Who killed him, we may never know, as justice goes astray.
No, and it works because you got me hooked. You have me 100% hooked because, yeah, there's no answer and there is no answer, right? I mean, you don't provide it and maybe there never is an answer. But this is the kind of poem that, like you said earlier when I challenged you about rhyme, that sticks with you. Because you're wrestling with yourself. It's a conversation piece, and it's a fun little mental game. So I love, and let me take a breath. What drew me into poetry originally was Cummings, because of the way he stylistically formatted his poems, and it made me think. And poems like this that kind of challenge you to think and put together the pieces are ever endearing. And the fact that you were able to carry your rhyme scheme so heavily through it makes it all pace correctly. So I love it. No, it's a very cool poem, and I like that you included this one tonight as well. So give me a little bit for all those young, aspiring, budding poets out there. What advice do you have to encourage them to keep writing?
You draw from your passion. If your passion is, like you said, with horses, and we have a horse stable right down the road from us, then start writing there. Draw from your passion and go from there, because your passion is going to not only capture you, it's going to capture the reader. If you're that much emotional, or get emotional with the poem, and you can express that, it's a hit, no matter whether it's about horses or about the ocean, about whatever your hobbies or likes or dislikes. If you use passion from something that you really know and enjoy, it'll be a hit.
100%. Great comment. Love your passions, and that's what this is all about. Pam, you're up. Can you comment on this latest poem, please?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I really enjoy and appreciate that your last two poems have been brevity. The last one had beautiful imagery to it, and I really enjoy that here you leave us with a mystery. And it actually takes me back to, they used to have short little mysteries like this in Reader's Digest, and they probably still do. It's just been such a long time since I read Reader's Digest. And all those little like riddle type mysteries that just got your wheels turning and got you thinking. And I like that you end this one with a question. You know, I like questions in poetry, actually. So this is just a very clever write. And my question for you is, we always keep in mind that poetry is subjective. When it comes to poetry, when you're reading poetry, what to you is a great poem? What characteristics to you does a great poem have?
First, there has to be a hook, something to draw me into the poem. You can have all the words that you can have, a 35-letter word. Something has to draw me into the poem. The title has to make it interesting to me, and then the first few lines of the poem have to draw me into the poem. If that doesn't draw me into the poem, then I'll move on. The first one has to be a catch. You may have, and then you transition to your message, and the message should also be believable, and it should be something with what you started the poem with. You don't want to change in midstream. You want to have the same theme through the poem, but you have to have a hook, have to have a message. Then the close has to be something where you can wrap the poem up. You may want to talk again about say something again about the first of the the hook that got you into the poem, or something that kind of wraps everything up. Don't leave, unless you have a mystery, don't leave the people hanging at the end of the poem. Just let them, weave it together.
That makes sense. I like that. I like that. By the way, Cass is listening in, and she is very excited that you happen to be our guest tonight. So, hi, Hap. Good to know you're listening.
Your fans are showing up, Stephen. Feel good about that.
Okay, yeah, both of them are showing up. I don't know. That's good. Both you guys are there, so we're good.
Thanks for sticking with us. We have your last poem of your set list available, ready when you are.
Okay. This is also just Kevin had one of his books he comes out every month or every other month, and this was selected to be in one of his one of the books that he published. This is also a mystery poem. The Fog, a Murder Mystery. Night like a shroud blankets the sand and the sea. In the distance, a rolling fog clings to the tide. A fog like a living thing enters the harbor, swallowing up the ships into a gray abyss. As it inches toward the shore, one lone fisherman ignores the threat and just continues to fix his nets. The fog now reaches the shore. The ancient mariner stands his ground. For an instant, two enemies meet. The fog advances. The man will not retreat. The man vanishes in the ghostly mist. Like an army, the fog maneuvers the coastal plain, retreating as daybreak begins, slowly returning to the sea, past the point where the fisherman made his final stand, leaving only the empty nets and boat at hand.
I love these. I love these mystery poems. This is very cool. Pam, go ahead. You get to start.
Oh, yeah. I definitely like these mystery poems. I like how in this one you set the tone with using nature, using the surrounding environment, that you've got this fishing town, this coastal town, the fog is rolling in, and it kind of builds up the intensity. One lone fisherman ignores the threat and just continues to fix his nets. The fog now reaches the coast. The ancient mariner stands his ground. It's not only a wonderful mystery, but within those lines, there's this idea of people who stand their ground against an environment that can be very challenging. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Well, and know, Stephen, I mean, know that what's fun about this show is that we're able to touch base with poets like yourself and take something back. So know that you've inspired me. I mean, first of all, what I said earlier about putting the individual name in a poem, that was a cool device that I'd never thought about before. But this whole genre of mystery or sleuth poetry, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of a cool little niche that I've never even thought of, and I'm kind of inspired to challenge readership in creating my own little mystery of poems. So it's very cool because it's endearing.
It's just fun to do. It's a fun break. It's a fun break from doing a serious poem or something. It's a fun break just to have an idea and just kind of have a mystery, kind of a mystery night.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and leave this evening knowing that you have inspired your fellow poets, because this is it's a cool thing that I've never even thought about delving into this, and I'm inspired by you. So congratulations. You're our first headliner that we've made through the entire set list, because you've got to enjoy the whole night to yourself.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. I enjoy being with you guys. Just talking with fellow poets.
No, you're a great interview, and you've given us some great insight to yourself. Is there anything else you want to, any other avenue, any other thing you want to discuss this evening before we part?
No, I just thanks for the honor of being on your show and being able to talk with you guys.
Well, Stephen, it was our pleasure. Pam, do you want to sign us off?
absolutely wonderful show tonight, Jeremy. Congratulations, Stephen, on being headline. Glad you could join us. Thank you, Hatch, for hanging on the board, and have a wonderful night or morning, everyone.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.